The start order is 1-7-4-2-3-9-8-5.
The Extra Lap RC Podcast.
Yes, this is the Extra Lap RC Podcast. My name's Aidan Burke, and as always, I'm joined by none of them. None of them have joined me today. Joey's working. Martin's got exciting BRCA things to do. So we're just going to have to cope. But luckily, I think I've got someone who talks nearly as much as me. Hi, Nathan Rawls. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks, Aidan. Yourself, buddy?
Mate, super, super smart. The people in the north, it's not as hot up here, mate, because we live in the mountains.
Oh, it's absolutely roasting down here at the moment. I think it's still about 26, 27 degrees at the moment.
Okay, and if you say that, I have to go on for our Jacksonville friends, double it, add 30. So that's like was it 82 to our Jacksonville friends, which for Brits, that's pretty hot, isn't it?
It is for 9, 10 o'clock at night, yeah. It's very warm at the moment still.
Yeah. And no, we don't have aircon because it's only like this for a week. So we survive.
Exactly. It's just not worth buying it for us lot. We get like 5 hot days normally a year.
We moan because like a £15 Argos fan doesn't cope.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Brilliant, mate. Okay. And thanks very much for your time this evening, because I'm not being funny. You have been a busy little bee, haven't you?
I don't think it's stopped for about the past 5-6 weeks, and it's not going to stop until middle of September. I think I've got one weekend off in that time.
Wow. So if we're ever short, if Martin gets called away on BRCA stuff any time, you're available. You might be asleep, yeah. But you'll be available.
Yeah, clearly, you know, I'm not doing nothing at all.
Okay, so what I should say for people who know, Nathan Rawls, Mr. UK X-Ray Off-Road, are we happy with the title of that?
Yeah, I'm the 1/10 Off-Road UK team manager for X-Ray or RC Disco. We also still look after a group of juniors, which we've been training for the past 6-7 years now. Most of them are now too old to be juniors, but we did take a couple of them with us this weekend. Mm-hmm. Just gone. And yeah, we do a lot of work with Martin and the rest of the team.
Well, this weekend, let's go backwards in time. That's easier for me to deal with. This weekend, you were at Hearts, somewhere near London as far as Scousers are concerned. At the juniors, the BRCA 10th Sections Juniors and Veterans Championship. Is Hart close to you? Is it the closest national track to you?
No. Eden Park's the closest national track for me, or normal national track, and that's an hour and a half technically west. Hart's is about 2.25 hours away from me. Which is sort of northwest from me, but I have to go west for an hour and a half before I can turn right and go north.
Right, because you are basically in France.
Yeah, if I go about another 500 yards from my house, I get very wet, and then the next people I see speak French.
Yeah, Berlin starts singing about white cliffs.
You've got it. I think I fall off of those when I get wet.
So, just for quickly, you know, that's a... Just like a UK national, we run two-wheel drive on Saturday and four-wheel drive on Sunday. Two separate competitions really ran, the juniors and then the veterans. How did you get on? Start with the good stuff.
Okay, well, there's actually four competitions that run there. So you've got an under-13s, an under-16s. Mm-hmm. You've got the V40 veterans, mm-hmm. and you've got the V50 veterans. So obviously, you're either over 40 or over 50 for the vets. The vets run all of us together. So, you know, whether you're a 50 or a 40, you're still racing against everybody to try and win the actual event.
Okay.
This year we had quite a few quick guys there. You had Carl Jackson from 8th Scale racing side of it. You had Ellis Stafford, the living legend, as I like to think of him, one of my heroes of RC. Mr. Owen himself. Oh, God, Steve Biscoe, Eugene Galley. There was more than enough quick lads there, should we just say. Yeah. People like Yevdoka were doing the V50 side of it, but there was a lot of us.
Yeah, I know my good friends of like Matt Dodd, Uncle Phil Shannon, Wyman.
Yep, they all made their way down for it. So most of them needed a passport.
Well, I think Doddy was actually in Cornwall all week.
God.
And I missed book the week. And then it's like, oh, I go, we've got to go to the vets, thinking, oh, it's Cornwall to Hearts. It's in the south. It's not far. And it's like 7 hours.
Yeah, that's about a 7-8 hour drive. Yeah. It's not a fun one. It's almost like you guys going up to probably Edinburgh or worse.
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah, it's a long old drive up from Cornwall up to that. So fair play to Doddy for that one.
So let's start with two-wheel drive. Happy.
I was absolutely over the moon. I came from the... I'll go slightly back further. I came from the Euros and a race at the Lakeland Classic and then went straight back into shifts at work. So I managed to do a grand total of absolutely zero prep on my cars for once.
Hang on, let me get this right. So because you didn't run in these cars at Lakeland. So your cars came off the track at Euros in your bag. And then when you got to, did you check them? Did you go, oh, yeah, they're still in my bag, and then go to Hearts?
Well, they were still in the motorhome. They never got in the bag. They were just thrown in the back of the motorhome. I literally arrived at Hearts, glued up some tyres on the morning, threw them on the car, charged up the battery or lipo, and made sure there was a PT in it for first practice. And that was about it. So as the day went on, we did some other prep on the car. You know, we finally got round to refreshing shocks and diffs and everything else, but initially for the first two rounds of practice and two rounds of qualifying, I didn't have time to do anything, so I was looking after the rest of the team. So it was, yeah, I was thinking, please hold together.
So go on then, so how did those two rounds go with your car that you've not changed since Robin Hood?
I think I TQ'd them. We managed to, it was one of those lucky days where you put the car down and it just works. So no setup change needed, no anything. I would like to have refreshed everything sooner, but didn't get the time to. Just put it down and just drove it. And yeah, the car was right on the money from the off. So
hang on, but doesn't this mean I'm right and you're wrong? Because
in what way?
Well, in many ways, but it was a good question. You've taken a car that the last time it was running around was on the super technical Robin Hood Euro track. Mm-hmm. Then go to Hart, which is not similar. It's not, the Astro is totally different. It's a big size, but the straight's a bit shorter, and it's got all that banking at the back. You didn't change anything, and you still did well. Maybe you've been wasting your time with all this setup all this time.
No, I think it was more that the setup on the car travels very well from track to track. But also, I mean, the Euros was for Robin Hood that I've seen in the past, there wasn't as much sand there at the Euros as what there was at the warm-up that you saw.
Yeah.
And when we got to Hearts, which every time I've been to Hearts, which is normally during the winter, you don't see the sand or the dust. So to turn up there and see quite a bit of sand and dust on the racing line and then have it sort of scrub off by the end of practice, but it was a very, very similar feel to the track in how the car reacted, how it, the sort of slide that you have on the Astro when you have that sort of level of sand and dust within it, was very, very similar. And when you got there, similar size jumps, that same sort of rattly patter that you get on slightly rippled Astro. And although there's a wall of death on it, which there isn't at Robin Hood, The rest of the jumps were about the same sort of size. The difference was you were sort of jumping to flat a lot of the time rather than to down. So managed to get away with it. Like I say, the car was just on it from the start. So was Ellis and Eugene, and I had some really, really good racing with them in qualifying and in the finals. I genuinely can't remember quite how many rounds of it I took. I know I did the first round, and then after that, I think Ellis got one, or Eugene did, and then I managed to take two of the others. So, and then went on to take legs one and two under a lot of pressure from Ellis in one and from Eugene in the other.
Well done, mate. Well done.
Yeah, I was happy with that. I think that's, since I've been old enough to be a veteran, I've done the last three veterrans and I've managed to win the two-wheel drive in all three of them. So I did Bury, Telford and here. So I've actually got a hat-trick now of two-wheel drive wins, so which was, I was quite proud to do that one. And obviously with what's gone on over the last week, it was nice to do one for Dave, shall we just say.
Yeah, definitely. Do you find your, like, it's X-ray, it's XB2, do you find it travels well?
Yes. I mean, this year, I want to say I've struggled a little. My local tracks are quite clean in terms of dust and sand, and any lockdown testing we were able to do prior to the Nationals, there wasn't enough people allowed at the tracks or running at the tracks to actually bring the sand level up. So when I turned up at Kidderminster, it was a bit of a baptism of fire because I've been running super thick diffs, quite a stiff suspension package, trying to actually take grip away from the car and make it safer all the time. And suddenly turned up at Nationals and Kidderminster, as you know, the dust and sand comes up through the roof. So I spent all day long just sort of dialing in traction into the car. I wasn't able to do the Southport National because of work commitments.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Boughton, which was super low grip. So again, we were dialing grip into the car all day long. I missed the boat on that one because we didn't realise everybody else was changing to their dirt spec cars by about rounds 3-4. So we carried on with the carpets and got them working, but we should have just gone to the dirts. We then did the warm-up, which again, that was super high sand, but the ideas from Boughton worked there. And then obviously more work with Martin and co. And now from there, I didn't change it for the Euros itself. I've not changed it for here, and it will be going to Stotfold National this weekend. Again, pretty much unchanged because we've now got it somewhere where we feel it should be perfectly fine for it. It will just be a diff change from a ball diff to a gear diff because the track's that little bit cleaner.
So, and we'll talk about proper RC in a bit, but what I picked up is you said, well, I didn't have time. You know, I was helping other people, which I know you do a lot of. You're at the same meeting I am at. I'm coming to sit in your gazebo early doors on the Friday to get some little hints and tips. But then you did said, well, then I refreshed me oils and me shocks and me diff. So did you just literally change them for exactly the same oil that you had it in?
Yeah.
Or was that it? Really?
Yep. It had done about 7-8 runs at the Euros for the diff and for the shocks. So we refreshed it, you know, sort of as soon as we could, once we actually had time, once we'd got everybody else where they needed to be. So it was literally same oils, same everything going in. When I refreshed the shocks, I have refreshed the diff, but I didn't need to because I think for round three, I swapped to a ball diff at that point because the dust was really coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, wanted that safety factor. But yeah, I mean, the ball diff has done 3 or 4 events. So that's probably just about getting ready for a refresh at that point as well.
So what has purely personal question here, boss. So what was the car better after you refreshed them? Because I'm a big fan of, I'm not being funny. I don't think I've ever changed oil at a toy car meeting. unless something's broke. So is the car better, more consistent? When you've just changed one set of 550-400s for another 550-400s?
Yeah, I mean, if the oil's done that many runs, the shocks always seem to feel a little bit soft and the car seems to wallow that little bit more. A refresh shock, it just, the car just feels that little bit more alive on it.
Okay. What?
So, hence, like I say, I knew how many runs it were done. Normally, realistically, normally for a national, it's fresh oils. And especially having done that much after an event, it should have been fresh oils before I started, but just time was at a premium.
Yeah, yeah, you've got things. And then four-wheel drive the same?
Rusty four-wheel drive.
Robin Hood dust off, that's it. Put some
quite literally, new mezzos on. Quite literally, even to the point I forgot to take the PT out of the two-wheel drive for four-wheel drive first practice. That's how unprepped we were.
Oh my God, you sound like me, mate. You sound like me.
It was proper schoolboy error morning, I can tell. but yeah, we got and we did that. We opted for a relaxing Saturday night barbecue and fire pit rather than getting the cars ready, because with how much we've done of late, I felt that was going to be a far more benefit to myself than tooling into the early hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the four-wheel drive, I'm just trying to think, it was finals day at the Euros, we refreshed diffs and shocks anyway, so that was going to be perfectly fine to go through if it needed to. Again, because the two-wheel drive was so good, we expected the four-wheel drive to be somewhere thereabouts as well.
Okay.
So I think literally the only change we made on the car through the day, I tightened up we've got a secondary one-way slipper on our slipper clutch system on the drivetrain. It's a bit like the fab that you've got in your...
Oh, I'm a fab expert, me, mate. Let's not get me talking about what the fab does.
It works in exactly the same way.
Obviously, I know what that way is, but for somebody else who maybe is not fully aware how that two-way slipper or a fab works, just briefly go through that. Obviously, I know. But
okay, so what we've got in our centre slipper section is we've got a standard slipper clutch, which is a three-pad, same as everybody else. Then on the front of that, we have a secondary tiny slipper clutch, which has got a one-way bearing on the outdrive of it. This, which we can then adjust via a tensioning screw. This allows the front wheels to be free-flowing if we want them to be in one direction, i.e. sort of off power, but it's still four-wheel drive under power. But we can adjust that tension on that from anything from fully locked to fully spinning freely, like a old-school one-way lay shaft would. So then you can just tighten that up to any point you want to get the feeling right under brakes. At the Europeans, there was only one really hard braking point. Everything else was smooth and flowing. So we had it set quite loose to actually make it easier and more flowing on the rest of the track, because we were having to run the mezzo as a control tire.
Yeah.
Whereas at Hearts, I was able to tighten that up another sort of 3/4 of a turn, take it back to sort of like about a 75% grip area. And then so I then had nice brakes to be point and squirt, but when it really needed to let go, it could do. And I think that was literally about the only change we made to the car. We were back on our usual inserts on the tires. Because of the dust levels, I went to a mezzo again on the front.
Sorry to interrupt, you say normal insert on the front on your mezzos. What would you class as a normal insert?
Right, so in the back end we run the Tony Avdoka Rude Bits cheetah foams.
Yep.
Because they just seem to really support the mezzo tire. They're that little bit bigger, a little bit wider, but the same sort of compound as a medium or a crag.
Yep.
They're just physically a larger insert, and I run them in wet and dry. Okay. In the front of a four-wheel drive, I normally use it's a Schumacher insert I use. It's one of their firm inserts. I think the part number's 669.
Hang on, tagging
And
that down, 669.
yeah, no, it's not quite as wide as a rear insert, but it's wider than the standard front. But it's
Okay.
the same sort of dimensions as a medium in terms of diameters, and it just seems to work really well with the mezzo tire for us with the X-ray cars.
Okay.
So we've combined that, and when we was at the Euros, one of the
Obviously,
guys.
I wouldn't allow you to do that, being the best tire tech ever.
Oh, here, not at the Euros we couldn't, but obviously, when Matthew Peters, one of our juniors, or well, not so juniors now, arrived at the Euros, he had some rear mezzos that had been cut to run on grass, and he'd done like a bar cut pattern going across them. And so I looked at it and really liked the idea, because I don't like the way everybody does the 3-3 cut on the mezzo. It means you're really driving on a thin contact patch all the time. So I sort of looked at how many, worked out it was going to be half the spikes missing, which is about the same as a 3-3 cut, and tried a bar pattern on the front. And then we were allowed at the Euros to glue the sidewall, and it just felt about right. And because it was such a wide contact area of spike, it just seemed to work for us. So I tried that again. Ellis was on a he was on a chevron style, which I think is what he always runs. We went on the bars, and I don't think there was much in it, to be honest.
So what
It
is
was
the actual bar style?
what is it?
Yeah,
If
to me.
you if you've got a If you've got a mezzo anywhere near you, or a
Yeah.
front mezzo anywhere near you, if you look on the outside, front outside edge, see there's like an outside row of spikes. If you cut off one of those outside row and then just cut straight across the tire, that entire row, you'll see that you take off the outside row and then just every other row that goes along. And it just creates a lovely bar going across the tire rather than the usual cutting the outside edges off. It's
Oh.
just a different way of doing it. I found it was slightly less initial, a nice mid-corner push, which with a mezzo is a rare thing, and just easier to get out because you weren't driving on such a thin contact patch.
Because
So,
I think what we
practicing.
saw on Tire Tech, I think Mark Gregory was there sitting there going, as they cut off like three spikes because they couldn't put a thicker insert in, we were on top of them all the time. That seems to make the front of the four-wheel drive mezzo even softer.
Yes, it did, and it seemed to make the carcass softer as well, which meant when I watched them, they all seemed to balloon a lot and sort of overdrive from the front, whereas when we did the bar pattern, it didn't seem to do that.
I think I've got what you're saying, but if you've got any pictures, send us
I'll
one.
send you one over.
And then, did you
No
say Peter's used that? And yeah, he's certainly not a junior. He's about 9 foot 4, isn't he?
I know, but he's only just 17 and just starting to learn to drive, so he's still a junior-ish, but he is
Excellent.
7 foot tall, I'll give you that.
Yeah. So, and did you say he used that pattern from grass?
Yes, he had that on the back of a mezzo, on the rear
No
mezzo on
way.
ground. It made it very mini spike style, but seemed to work when the grass was disappearing. When the mini spike starts to sort of become a little bit vague, put it on at that point, and it seemed to just work really well. So yeah.
Well, that's really useful because we've got a regional up at South Lakes on grass.
Well, I've obviously just done South Lakes, and I started off on a mini spike and then went to a full mezzo on the back of my Losi Double X, and they were once the grass was going. So type of thing around about round three, it was straight onto a mezzo. So and
Just
they were good.
a normal yellow mezzo.
Yep, they gave over a mini spike, I'd say they gave about 5-10% less side bite, but 10-15% more drive. And so it was you could unload the car and dance it through the corners easier and just square it up on the throttle. So definitely an improvement.
Oh, I might need to cut that bit out, Nathan, so I can tell people when we get to South Lakes. That's what I feel like it does. And they won't have listened.
I'll put up a Facebook post for them all. Don't worry.
I suppose that's a really good segue. You should do a podcast about, you know, you went from, you travelled near enough from the Lakeland class into at South Lakes, which is Hendle in the Lake District, just a grass field with a little kind of box rostrum in for sort of their classic events, because you seem to enjoy them just as much as the ultra competitive events that you do.
At the moment, possibly even slightly more. During lockdown, there was still some vintage racing going. There was local club racing going. Mm-hmm. I managed to get an entry into the 2020 revival race. And I've been starting commentating down my way at club events. We realised that if with the early stages of COVID, when we were allowed to get back on track, mm-hmm. If there was commentary there, you could run the event from a tent or from race control without having to come into contact with people. People knew what was going on and everything. Yeah. So I spoke with Les at Barham, which is my local club, mm-hmm. And said, you know, so look, you know, so I won't say I'm happy on a microphone, but I'll happily have a go and we'll see if we can make it work.
Yeah.
And ended up having a real laugh with it. Really enjoyed it. The days ran so much smoother. I could be cheeky and take the mickey out of people on the microphone. I could be serious when needed. And it just worked. So when we went to Revival, there wasn't commentary there in 2020. And I didn't have the time to do it through the day. But when we got to the finals, I said, you know, so would you like me to commentate a couple of these? And reluctantly, they handed over a microphone.
Nice.
And it just worked. It really did. Where the vintage racing is a lot more relaxed. Don't get me wrong, it's still competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's more about the fun side of racing. It's not as stressed as what a regional is. It's far more sort of club racer style. It's more about the cars and the legends that you can get racing there, because you'll see people like Jamie Booth, Craig Drescher, Danny Conway, Lee Broadhurst, people mm-hmm. like, you know, James Pritchard, Andy Woods, loads of that lot turn up to these style events. And it's just a little bit, like I say, just that little bit more relaxed. And most of them are done for a charity. Lakeland's is done for their Northwest Air Ambulance.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Revival's done for Parkinson's.
Yeah.
When I'm trying to, hot off the press, I'm trying to get one arranged with a 2-dayer for Eden Park. Okay. And if we can get that charity wise, it will be for either motor neurones disease or MND. Or neuroblastoma cancer, because it's something that's very close to my family's heart, shall we just say. Mm-hmm. So again, a lot of this vintage stuff is done with charity in mind, and people turn up racing with that in mind as well. So it's just that little bit more lighthearted. So we did the commentary at Revival the first time round, and the comments and the positive feedback we got from that meant that sort of I spoke to John and said, look, you know, so would you like me to do the entire event in 21? Which we did again. I was also invited up to Lakeland's for the 21 Lakeland Classic again to do commentary, which we did. We had an absolute nightmare getting there because we set off from just the other side of Dover, and I got as far as Folkestone, which is about 20 miles down the road, and the gearbox in the motorhome blew. So we ended up in the wife's car with a small tent rather than in a lovely comfy motorhome going all the way up to Kendal. Yeah. And lost a chunk of holiday that we were going to do after it. But nevertheless, we did the event and it was awesome. I'm assuming you've raced at Lakeland's already.
I've been to South Lakes.
Sorry, South Lakes, my bad.
That's okay.
The grass holds up really well. The track holds up really well. It doesn't dig up. If it's slightly damp, it just seems to survive.
Yes.
Put up with 2 days of solid racing on it, and there was still grass on the racing line. And I know the vintage stuff is only running sort of 10.5s or 8.5s, but they're still turboed up to the hilt. So you're still tearing the grass out of it as you go. And it really lasted well. So we came back this year. It was one of the events that I wanted to do because I had so much fun the previous year. And it actually coincided with the end of the Euros.
Yeah, so, you went straight from one to the other, it looked like.
Yeah, I did. I did a whole week of racing at the Europeans and then left and drove another 2.5 hours north and drove a vintage car on a Sunday. I think I drove a Losi Double X because it was two-wheel drive on the Sunday. And was narrowly pipped by Andy Woods for the win in class. And so, but just had an absolute scream with it. He was running an Associated B3 in Masami colours, and I was running a Losi Double XCR in my colours. So seemed to be good. It was, and most importantly, it was some really, really close, clean nip and tuck racing, which is what it's all about for me.
Definitely. You know, vintage. I sometimes get messages from like some of my American friends, and they all turn around and go, "Why don't you run four-wheel drive?" And I go, "Well, at Southport, we'd struggle to get a four-wheel drive heat. But as long if we just said vintage on Sunday, as long as Berry, because Berry is like our next closest club, if they were like when they have a week off, we just said vintage, we'd have two heats of vintage, not a problem."
Yep. Even in the southeast, we're the same. Club events, 1 to 2 heats of vintage, a heat of trucks, 4 or 5 heats of two-wheel drive, and maybe a heat of four-wheel. This is even shown in our regionals that we're getting 40, 50 two-wheel drives turn up, but 25 four-wheel drives at most. It's a bit worrying, but is what it is at the moment. We've lost a lot of races, have stopped with COVID. And so now we start the long process of building the numbers again.
Yeah, I think for that, I'm going to say some of the competitive races stopped and haven't come back. If we take this in a common thing, COVID was great for RC. I know we couldn't do it for a bit, but the people who have come back, or the people who have started, or the things that have happened, you know, everyone's taking. In fact, we're at Southport, we're a bit like after the Lord Mayor Parade type thing, you know, because we were every Sunday, no one travelled, everyone went to the same place. And now at Southport, we're back to like 40 people on a club day. And some of our people who have only seen it during COVID go, "We used to have 8 heats here." And I'm like, there's no nationals, there's no regionals, there's no Oopals.
Yeah.
You know, we just came to Southport every Sunday.
We were the same. I think the first events, we were governed by how many people we could fit on the rostrum. As soon as that came down to 1 meter spacing or segregation on the rostrum, we were heats of 10 and 75, 80 people at a meeting. And now, at the same track, you're lucky if you get 35-40.
Yeah, I think, I just think those races are doing other things. I'm not saying they're doing other things, but like we can see it with some of my mates. They'll go to like an Oopal, like a couple of weeks ago we went to Mendip, and then if they're not real crazy people, like I'm not being funny, you and me, they then have 2 weeks off.
Yeah.
Because they've been away, because they sit there and go, I've been away for 3 days racing toy cars. I'm not coming next Sunday. I'm not coming the Sunday after. I'll turn up the week after that.
At which point there's a regional on somewhere else and they've got to go there instead.
And we've got to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
what did you run? I'm not worried. I just think it is different. That was the you know, we've done so much racing at Southport in the last 2 years. We've had more races at Southport in the last 2 years than any other time. More entries, any of these things, it's been great because we were constantly raw and no one, and we didn't have weekends away and we weren't trying to book flights to go see the, go to the Florida Carpet Championships in November and things along those lines. That was just what we did. You know, like the BRCA said that, you know, don't matter what your favourite class is, just race at whatever's closest.
Yes, yes. I mean, we did. My closest track is Barham. It's about 25 minutes from my house. It's where I've just posted. I was there yesterday, so I posted up some vintage footage of the cars that I'm running at this year's revivals on it. And we helped them. We started helping with track working parties. We improved the lumps and bumps in the track, you know, peeled back the surface and started sorting sections out because there was enough of numbers there to actually do it.
Yeah.
Started working on trying to improve the facilities, the style of the jumps, the, you know, remove the rotten parts of, remove the rotten jumps, start rebuilding them and things like. And a lot of the clubs really did well from that. I know Barham certainly did. Eden Park was a lot longer before it was able to get racing because it was in the middle of a social club.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Which had to stay closed for so long. We just weren't allowed to get down there and use it. So they almost had to dig it back out of the dirt again, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But Barham being out the back and beyond was far easier to work within the rules and actually rebuild it as such, or get it, you know, sort of improve the facilities a lot. And so then when we started putting on meetings, it was all immaculate and you suddenly, it wasn't a problem to get 70 odd people at, you know?
Yeah. 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 There's lots of good people, are doing lots of great things in RC. Whatever. And some people don't like that or like that. And I always go, I have got no idea what's good for RC. So if someone else wants to have a go at something, let's just give it a go. It might be brilliant.
Yeah. Especially at the moment in the current times, rather than keyboard warrioring, we need people to be working together. Some of the comments I've seen online of late at various events has been, it saddened me a lot, should we just say, when there's so many people working so hard to not rescue our hobby, but keep our hobby running as it should do with the lower numbers. Keep our tracks open. You know, there's people really, really working above and beyond to do all of that. I mean, I've now stepped back from what I can do at Barham because of my racing commitments. But I know a lot of the Serpent guys like Darren Lewis, Nick, Les Help, who runs the club, Jamie Pickles, James Clifford, and people like are still down there week in, week out, making sure that the track is all doing what it should be. And that's just at one club. And you have that same sort of core group of people at every club around the country. And yet people seem to be more intent on trying to poke holes in it rather than push it forwards as it needs to be.
Engagement is good. You know, Facebook, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Yeah.
But I say to everyone who ever asks me, and I think, hey, just remember, you know, did anyone punch anyone? No.
No.
Did anything catch on fire? No. Are you now home? Yeah. Finish. Job done. Everyone else will forget. People will pick. I think some people enjoy doing that, and that's how they get their enjoyment.
I know. Our regional rep has a great saying, Steve Brooke does, and that is, your opinion is as valid as the help you have given.
I'm stealing that one.
No help whatsoever, your opinion doesn't count for anything.
Oh, well,
and
done.
That's it. You know, sort of, we went through a stage in 17, 18, 19. I was stepping back a little bit from racing because of family stuff that we were trying to do. But I gave up a lot of Saturdays to go and help at regional events, help get tracks laid out, help the clubs actually prep for the event itself. You know, because I sat there prior to that being one of the owners, and I sort of sat there, Steve quoted that at me, and it really did hit home that, you know, you're not helping, but you're happy to sit there and moan about it. And so I started helping, and all I was actually met with, other than those that were grateful for my help at the clubs, was the same keyboard warriors online, then moaning that, you know, sort of, I must be putting out a track layout that I like, or I would be pre-event testing, or I would
I would that. Yes, and of course.
Great, so I'm giving up my own time to actually help with a club, or help a club be the extra one, you know, bring four or five of the team along to actually do things, and you get keyboard warrior for it. You know? And you just think, well, that doesn't actually encourage me to carry on that kind of help. But, you know, we've still done it. A lot of the X-Ray guys still try and help. I know we had two regionals on grass, a very local club called Plough.
Yeah.
And it is a one-man band. Steve Andrews runs it. He doesn't do social media. He just gets on and works on it as hard as what he can. He gets help from the likes of our regional rep, a couple of the guys from Eden Park. My work this year meant that I couldn't get there. But I know people like Steve Davis from my team were straight down there, still lending a hand, cutting the grass, getting everything ready for it. So, you know, we've led by example, and hopefully that will then start to filter through for others.
Yeah, I think I'm really positive about RC. I'm really positive about RC racing, UK, Euros. You know, we've had some great events. We've got, you know, we were chatting about the Lakeland Classic. I'm still haven't asked. My question is, you're going to have to tell me what vintage cars you actually ran during that, what, on the Lakeland meeting.
So Lakeland's, I ran a Losi Double X in two-wheel drive. The previous year, I ran a Factory Team Ultima, 1986-87 car, mm-hmm. and a Kyosho Laser ZXR, which is about a 93. So wow. This year, I couldn't do four-wheel drive because that was four-wheel drive finals day at the Euros.
Yeah.
But like I say, I could do the two-wheel. So I've made the most of that, at least.
Okay. Losi Double X, I think it's quite popular. It's certainly in the Northwest for the vintage guys who want to go quick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I normally run the older classes. Most people that race vintage, myself included, run it for the nostalgia of certain cars, certain eras, certain styles. So my Ultima that I've recreated is a near on exact replica of what I was given at the 1988 Reedy race. Even down to the point, it's got full Trinity chassis on it, which is sort of got built-in kick up in a carbon chassis, or graphite chassis, sorry, not a carbon. It's got Andy's arms, which you'd know as RPM. It's got genuine option house shocks. It's as close as what I can build to the car I was given at the event by Chris Moore, who was the Kyosho team manager and is now the Mugen world team manager, I believe, nowadays.
Okay.
I do run an XLS quite a bit because I support Muzum Models, which is Ian Groom. He does a lot of work behind the scenes helping Revival and a lot of info on just the older Schumacher cars. So we help him a lot. This year, Lakeland's, I ran my Double X because one of the guys that's coming along to help me with the scrutineering he doesn't actually have any vintage cars. So I'm loaning him a Double X4 in four-wheel drive and a Losi Double X in two-wheel drive. And I just wanted to give the car a shakedown run before I actually handed it over to him to make sure it was doing what it should be. Wow. So I ran it at the Lakeland. Also, I realised that I'd be very tired from the Euros, so I wanted a car that just drove itself, should we just say.
Yeah.
And the Losi is very famous for that. So for once, I picked up a newer car and went for it.
Okay, and then at the Iconic Revival, you said scrutineering.
Yes. So there's there were grumbles that cars are going away from what is being vintage. They're trying to be modernized too much. And so a group of people stuck their hands up and said, well, tell you what, we'll put we will A, enforce the rules that are already there that haven't, that are there as a guidance,
yeah,
that haven't been enforced, and B, we will tweak some of them to stop or to reduce how, and try and keep cars far more period rather than letting them be just fully modernised at every opportunity.
Was there a thing that like tipped it over the edge? Was there like, you're like, oh, not for, everyone's got this new shocks on, or everyone's got something? Was there sort
not,
of
not such? No, there's from every event you hear, as you yourself will understand. You go to a club meeting, so and so will have the latest tire that nobody else can get, or so and so has got the new motor or the new batteries, or you know, this new shock package from XYZ that, you know, you can't get the parts to make. And so there's always that kind of grumble, and vintage racing is no different. As happy and as friendly as it is, there is still that same group that like to, I say grumble, it's the wrong words to use.
I know what you mean.
They see things that they don't like, and they will verbalise that. Behind the scenes rather than all over social media. So it's done in the right way.
Yeah.
From that feedback, we then as a group said, well, let's put something in place to try and stop it or to reduce it. And let's start getting everybody far more period in their modifications, how they're doing things. Try and get the racing just that, by bringing it back that step, get the racing back closer again, okay, and actually more for the fun side of it. And yeah, so we've put those into place. There will be a group of scrutineers at the event. I will be one of them. A load of my Southeast guys are going to take over a heat each. They'll be showing what we need, and it will just go from there. And then there's a few of the other guys that are actually on the committee who will also be in there as well. So between us, we'll get it done. I won't say it's perfect. There's rules that we've put in that we don't like, but we can't find another way around them at the moment.
Yeah.
There's, you know, but as we've said, when people have asked us about set rules, we've also said, look, you know, sort of these are a first draft. This is where we're at, you know, sort of, it's not perfect, and we acknowledge that. But at the same point, we're, for want of a better idea at this precise moment as to how to get around said problem, this is our current solution. If you've got a better idea, we are all ears. You know, so if you want to come and help us with this, feel free. You know, sort of.
Let's not let perfection get in the way of progress.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, you know, sort of, we want this to help make Revival better, and it's Revival can be something absolutely amazing, and it is something absolutely amazing.
It's going to explode.
I can see a series. I can see so many different directions that it could potentially go in. At the moment, we're just sort of holding it as it is, and let's get it right before we do anything, you know?
Yep.
And so, yeah, that's kind of what's going on. We'll see, you know, sort of feedback from Revival at BMR in 3 weeks will be acted on for Broxtowe in September. And if we need to make changes and tweaks, we will, to make Broxtowe run better.
Now I've just wrote a little note down that, you know, Southport this year will, you know, is the only place he's going to have a national, a regional, an Oople. I'm thinking then in maybe a couple of years' time, we go national, Oople, regional, Revival. Maybe we do the full hit.
Quite possibly. We never say no. I know there's, you know, sort of one of the ideas that's been bandied is for Revival to go on the road. I don't know if it will or won't. We've had, you know, sort of, I understand, you know, sort of A1 was the original home of Revival. Now it's BMR is the home of Revival. We also now started going to Broxtowe. I'm not sure whether we're going to be going there, you know, to those places in 2023 or not.
They are quite central, though, aren't they?
Yes, both of those. They are very central. Which it needs to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like the end of season finals. They need to be Midlands based or middle of the country based. It encourages far more people to come to it.
Yeah, we had this discussion at like the Upal Mendip before we knew what was going on for round three, and people were like where we want it, and a few of us went, we should go to Broxton, and people were like, why do you want to go to Broxton? Because it's like 2 hours from everyone, near enough.
Yes.
It's 2 hours from 90% of people.
Yes, it's only people like me that live out on the furthest tips of the country that is suddenly a 4.5 hour drive for you. but that's part of life. So.
Yeah, we can't make base decisions based on you, Stevie Sheridan.
And probably Alan.
I'm going to say, we haven't seen much of Alan, but you know, like is it Robert Stevenson's up in the Highlands or something like that?
Yeah,
the guys at Stonehaven.
Yeah, we did the North Coast 500 before COVID. We actually stopped off and saw Robert in his calf. And stopped there for a full English. And, it was brilliant, you know, sort of sitting there eating breakfast, chatting toy cars. The wife was well impressed with that one.
Yeah, that would be, yeah. And obviously we can't take into consideration, never mind Martin being the emperor of everything. It's like, it's Callum, you know, who's like, keeps telling me that he lives 2 hours past where Martin lives.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, you just don't realise how far these places are.
No, and then you realise just how many miles they put in to get to our nationals, our end of season finals. There's a lot of commitment that goes on. So
yeah.
I don't know whether we get that commitment for vintage. I don't know. I don't know. Like I say, I'm torn between the one off events that make vintage amazing and would it kill it if we did a series of it?
Yeah. It might do, because
then it becomes serious and about racing rather than about the vintage cars.
Yeah.
This is what makes it such a difficult set of decisions to make and things to do. You just don't know.
Because it'd be great to get, and we'll pick on these people because they don't care. It'd be great to get Jamie Boot with there and Drescher were there and, big Kevin Moore up again. But if it's a series and then I think, well, hang on, I'm not going to all three. I'm not doing two. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Don't do that.
And you suddenly get like what the Sooms became, which was 24 hardcores that did the entire series and a load of people that just did their local one.
Yeah, like Upal. That's a definition of Upal and Ooze.
Yeah.
There's like 30 people, crazy people who go everywhere, and then it's the local. And that's the way Upal like it. You know what I mean? That's the one. Yeah. That's what they tend to say.
It works in its own way. It just, but it's that stops me. You know, stops me pushing for a series in it. You know, I don't know. I really don't know what way would actually. You know, and this is. This is why I've sort of not sort of leapt and said, let's do a great big race series. I mean, Iconic do the on-road one, and I think they do four. But I don't think their numbers are as big as what we get in the off-road side of it.
Yeah, and because it's on-road, there's only certain places you can really do that anyway, isn't there?
Yeah,
I mean, they've got to go there, whereas vintage could be anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy BMR. I enjoyed Broxtow. I felt some of the jumps at Broxtow were a bit big for the older vintage cars. But that was taken out in the layout for four-wheel drive. So it was our first year at Broxtow. So there's always lessons to be learned from both sides, should we just say. But I would love to see it somewhere like Telford because the track is undulating rather than jumpy. Kidderminster. I'd like to say Robin Hood, but I don't know about the jump section in front of the rostrum. Eden Park, because you can avoid all the big jumps, but I don't know if it's Midland, you know, it's not Midland enough, which is where it comes back to your sort of Telfords, And the likes, the one I always keep thinking of is Boughton, because it's low grip Astro, and that would really suit the two-wheel drive mid rear motor cars.
Oh, yeah. And, it, you know, for all Boughton is Boughton, it looks amazing.
Boughton in, I want to say September. I can't remember. I've seen a post on Facebook.
Yeah, Boughton, Barry did mention that, yeah.
So if I can, I've got to look. I think I might be able to do the Saturday of it, but I'm working on the Sunday. If I can, though, I might try and get up to that just to see what it's like as ideas.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. But, you know, it's another one of those things of, yeah, probably shouldn't ask Aiden. Mate, we've got like, I've got other bits to go for and other questions to do.
Go for it. Because we've become very sidetracked thanks to my waffling technique.
Love it. That'll not be funny. It's brilliant. So I would just get a few little points in. And if that's okay, and like we're discussing this while this is recording, so you can't really say no. and then we'll just have a little bit of a chat near the end regarding some general RC stuff. But, you know, I thought I'd done really well with these questions because I heard that the next Euros is in Utrecht, in Holland. Would that be the closest? Did you hear that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I heard the rumor at the Euros, but I've not had anything confirmed yet.
Correct. We work on rumor and conjecture. It's not a problem. But that must be like could be the closest Euros to you ever, couldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. I think that's only 2.5-3 hours once I get the other side of the tunnel. So, and I live 20-minute drive from the Euro tunnel. So, I used to race in Belgium more than I raced in the UK over the winter. So, it's not a, to me, to go to Utrecht is not a problem at all. Especially as I've got friends that live close to it. So that would be a good Euros for me.
I think that again, no one's going to tell me anything good. I had a box from hashtag Schumacher family turn up today. And then, so I wrote down, what was the last thing you got delivered? What was the last thing that was in an order from X-Ray or Disco that turned up to your house?
Was a care package for the Europeans. So it was a load of wheels, some spare wishbones, some hinge pins, and a spare idler and lay shaft because mine had done, God knows how many, were done about 2.5 years worth of running, so I wanted to refresh it before the Europeans.
Nice. Well done. And then my personal question was, my car, my LD2 at Southport was very grip rollery on Sunday. And the fella next to me, Mark, and as we were just standing on the rostrum, I said, my car's not great. And he just turned around to me and said, and this is the way I make setup decisions. He went, I've just put harder springs on mine. And I went, that sounds like something I'd do at the track. I don't think I've ever, never mind ever changing oil, I've never changed the spring. Right? It's black front, green rears, right? That's it.
Yeah.
And at first, I just put a slightly harder front spring on. I can't remember the colour. And a slightly harder rear spring on. And the car was terrible. It was awful. So being lazy, I should have changed the oil. I think the oil was too soft for coming from Bendip. So what I did, I thought, do you know what? Maybe if I just put the rear spring back to the original green one, that might be better. And I'm not being funny. My car was awesome.
Yep.
Why was that? Why was it terrible? Two hard springs front and rear, but just better with just a harder spring on the front?
When you went to a harder spring on the front, you scrubbed off enough front end grip to make the car just safer. Sometimes if the spring is too hard, it can make it slightly too pointy, but I think on the LD2 you can get away with that, whereas us with the X-Ray, we actually go the other way and go a slightly softer front spring normally to numb the car down. But for you guys, a stiffer one definitely works, and when you went softer on the back, you just added safety to the back end of the car and allowed it to overpower the front.
Okay, it was just awesome. That's all it was. It was just awesome.
Aiden actually got a setup choice right. I'm amazed.
Well, I always get my setup choices right. It's just then the conditions turn to be wrong.
I like it.
I'm either happy where I am, or sometimes when I feel like I'm not making big changes, but if the conditions are changing, I either don't change enough or change too much. So that at that point, I always feel like I'm not doing it. I'll just go back to where I am. I have some golden rules, you know.
No,
never doing that.
We're lucky. I've got some very clever people that race around me, like Manny Panesar, George Tolman, Phil Craddock, Ian Parker. And so when we go, sort of Ollie and John, sorry, as well, when we go to these events, there's normally a sort of talk and four or five people can go in four or five different directions. And by the next run, at least three of those have got it right. And we then follow that direction as a team. It just makes it so much easier. It's something that I've noticed from Schumacher with their national squad. It's so strong in F1 drivers. When they turn up to the national, by the time they finish practice, they are absolutely on it as a group and a team. Whereas the rest of us are sort of still fighting to find where we are with it.
Yeah, you know, Schumacher are amazing, just in case Muzz listens.
That's your deal secured for next year.
we can talk. Well, that's one of my jokes for later on. What we can do, our silly season jokes, because obviously we've already boxed Joey off going to Agama because they'll release their 10th, as Lewis Jones told us the other week. Mm-hmm. And you know, let's start Martin Owen to Team Associated now.
Yeah, now that his wife is obviously a top fan,
a massive fan.
Yeah. I mean that's tantamount to divorce, I would have thought. But you know, so they did talk about you coming our way, and I did comment that you've already bought all the bags, so you know the cars are going to be cheap at that point.
Oh, well, you know, if I went anywhere, mate, you know I would be back to my X-ray days.
No. Not that we're biased or anything.
No, you know, I think that was one of the things from... Bruno put a great post up after, because one of the things we should talk about now is, like, did you watch any of the 8 Euros at... in Portugal?
I managed to see small bits of it. Obviously, I was running at the veterans whilst a lot of it was on. We kept on top of the results. I know Bruno was only, I think, about 10, 11 seconds off of David Ronnefelk, who eventually won it. So fair play to him and the Mayoko guys. But I was more impressed that Bruno went from, I think, 3 warm-ups in a row, which were all week long, and you have to realise they then stay on for 4 or 5 days afterwards testing. He then went and did a touring car Euros, left the touring car Euros on the Sunday night, arrived in the UK at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and then came straight to the track to do the 10th off-road Euros at Robin Hood. He left that on the Sunday, arrived home in Portugal, picked up his 8th scale stuff and met Bayer at the track that afternoon for the 8th scale Nitro Europeans. And that's 3 completely different classes and a podium in all of them and a win in one of them. And yeah. I don't care who you are, that's very impressive to be able to switch to those different disciplines.
He just doesn't spend the time, you know. There was a great post on Facebook, you know, Facebook likes are important to me. Ronnefelk was like 1,300 likes for winning the Euros, and Bruno's at about 700 for a thing. And he talks about, you know, some of the comments X-ray get and things along those lines. Mm. And every time that happens, I sit up here and just chat about this. And some people say, well, if someone actually messaged me this week and said, well, if he was mean, you wouldn't tell anyone. If Bruno was a bad, and I'm going, no, you are right. I wouldn't. But I also wouldn't spend time telling people every time that I've met him, he's been the nicest fella in the world. And I'm not like, I'm not messaging him when it's at race meetings. I'm messaging half the time when he's on holiday going, are you, what about this race? I heard this, you know what I mean? He's got time for everybody. But I did message him, go, I did jokingly say, oh, you're free on Tuesday. And he's like, Aiden, I'm on holiday. I told you I'm on holiday. I'm not doing that. I'm like, all right, mate, don't worry about it. We'll be fine.
I would have told you no at that point, and all with the amount of races he's done, even more than me, and that's saying something.
Yeah, and he just moved on. And you know, he could go to the world. You know, the bits I watch a lot of the coverage on Saturday of the 8th Euros in Portugal, and it was Canas, it was Bruno and Ronafalk who were out and about. They were the people to catch.
Of all of them, I actually thought Canas was going to get it. His car looked the most consistent out of all of them. Even if he was on edge, his car looked really good. And he TQ'd the event. And I genuinely thought Canas was going to do it.
The bit I saw from the, again, excellent coverage from RC Racing TV, especially on that Saturday, he just seemed to pit more often, Canas.
Yeah, he couldn't get fuel mileage. And so he had to come in, I think it was a minute earlier than them or something stupid. And it meant by the time they did a 45-minute final, Ronald Felk had one less stop. And I think Bruno had two mistakes, which was where the 10 seconds came from. And for 45 minutes, they all rattled around at virtually the same pace.
And now, super happy for David Ronald Felk. I'm super happy for Mayako, you know.
They did a good job. They did a very good job on that one.
Yeah, and I thought RC Racing TV, again, you were at the vets at this point, but they did like it's like a Sky Sports kind of news Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
With, you know, I know Keenan from the No Name RC podcast was on. You know, they had two guys in England. Yeah, Matt and I think it was Frank. He was sat in England behind a green screen, and Nick Damon was out with his microphone and his thing camera on a little stick, and the whole thing. And I'm not funny, mate. It wasn't perfect, and every so often they'd turn over, but they tried. And they tried. Like I like RC Racing TV's ideas.
Yes. Yes.
Let's go big.
Well, you got to realise Nick also does, or Nick and the guys there, I should say. Sorry, my bad. They've done a lot of work with Le Mans. I mean, Nick was or is still, he does pit lane at Le Mans during the 24 hour. So he sees how modern full-size motorsport do things, and he's starting to bring those ideas across into the RC world. And it's working. We are getting more coverage. I mean, we've always laughed and joked that we are the biggest unknown sport or hobby or whichever way you wish to describe it in the world. And the work that people like Jimmy did with Oopal for years, just on internet, exposing us to the masses. And now Nick and the guys at RCTV. Are doing it can only be a good thing, so in the long term,
100%. Just going through my points as quickly as possible now, because you know this is long, right? This is like long. I believe Red RC are coming back to do coverage. I saw that on the Facebook tonight. Obviously, they're going to do a lot of on road, and I'm sure those Irish brothers have gone, ooh, I think the worlds are in Pattaya, Thailand. One of the on-road worlds, so they're clearly going there.
Yeah.
It's nice to see those guys. We've got, I think I've mentioned it before, round three of Oopal, which was supposed to be at Robin Hood some point in September, is now got a slightly new date and is at Southport now.
Yeah.
That's great for us. Great for Southport. Oopal is a kind of a bit of a Northwest series, as you know, with that hardcore. Yeah. So we needed to have somewhere in the middle to get that done. So that was great for us. I know the Silverstone date's out for the winter series on carpet in the college are out. I think it's a slightly shorter series this year, probably because they've got a Milton Keynes Grand Prix at the end.
Yeah, looking forward to that one, or hoping I can get an entry to that one.
Yeah, I'm sure you can, mate. I'm sure you can. And also, the EOS at Worksop, I can tell you it's got well over 100 entries now. The halls are in. You know, James Helliwell's going to have a weekend off and race toy cars and not worry about generators and catering and Aiden causing trouble in tyre tech. Oh, someone reminded me this week, mate, that at one point during tyre tech, me and Mark Gregory were picking the rear tyres up, putting them to our ears and squeezing them as if we could hear the difference in the insert. We did that for a bit of an hour. For about an hour, the French were just freaked out. They honestly thought that's what we were doing. We're sitting there going, like, yeah, okay, that's a rear that, yeah. Thanks very much. So, thank you very much for the message for reminding me of that stuff. It's brilliant. Is your racing this weekend, Stoffold?
Yes, so we're Stoffold National this weekend. I then get my one weekend off until the end of September. And then I'm Revival BMR, where again I'm commentary and racing. Then I'm not even sure after that. I haven't even looked that far ahead. I've got a...
Okay. What are you doing in your weekend off?
I think I'm going to take the wife out for a date weekend because she is more than understanding. The Monday I got back from Lakeland, she took me out for a spa day. So I think I'm going to return the favour and take her out somewhere nice.
Okay, yeah, I saw one of the stories, probably from someone around your way because of the travel home. And I think you're like, because he'd been away for like 4 days at Lakeland Classic, not washed, not drinking. He's like, I think it's his missus still made him sleep on the camp bed when he got home on Monday or Tuesday night. And I'm thinking, that is exactly my missus as well.
This is why we have the motorhome. It's not quite so roughing it, shall we just say.
Yeah. It's not. I think for Southport Hoopla, I think I'm going to like hire a caravan and get someone to dump a caravan in the middle of the park. I'll use that for the weekend, mate. We've had a great time. Thank you very much for your time. And we're going to thank sponsors and all those things before we go. But you mentioned earlier in this conversation that we've had, and it's very important that I think, and you do, that we bring this up. But, you know, we mentioned last week how heartbroken we were at the news that Dave Church had passed. And, you know, there's some extra information that you want to mention as well.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure of all the info at the moment, but basically Dave was either just moved to or is down in the Penzance area, but has been Kent-based most of his life that he was in the UK. Basically, with everything that's going on, his immediate relations, as in sisters and the likes, have suddenly had to pick up the bill with everything that's gone on. And so what David Poulter's partner, Wanda, has done is to do a GoFundMe. So that we can repatriate DC back to Kent and contribute towards his funeral and a last drink with DC for those that are able to make the day. There's still dates for the funeral to be decided yet. The GoFundMe was launched last week and it's only been on for a few days. Obviously, David Poulter has pushed this massively, as has Wanda. I've put the link to it in my report from the veterans as well, and I will forward that link to you after so that you can add it to this, if that's okay with you.
Not a problem. I personally shared it after speaking to his sister. I didn't know his sister at all. But one of the things I did is I gave her the link to the extra lap post. And, you know, just to see the outpouring of comments.
Fantastic.
From around, you know, because otherwise she would never see that.
DC was the voice or UK voice of RC. Yeah. He did a huge amount of work in the early days of me coming back in racing with Jimmy Story to promote myself and get me back up to the top, or near the top, I should say. I was never at the top.
The top. He's at the top, listeners. If you don't know Nathan or you're in Jacksonville, this is the top.
He did a huge amount of work with Jimmy, reporting on me, promoting me, and just generally helping me. And he did that not just for myself, but for a lot of people. He has commentated all the way up to a world's level, nationals, Europeans, clubby events. And he just had an absolute flair with a microphone that I honestly say I think there's only one person that can compete with him, which is the great Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, so I want to say owe him some thanks. That's the wrong words to use, but want to give him some thanks. I know the GoFundMe was set up for about $3,500. Mm-hmm. And last time I checked, which was, I think, Monday morning, it was up at 2,900 already, and it's still climbing. And basically, I do know that anything that is over the top is going to get donated to a charity. I'm just going to have a quick look on my phone at Dave Poulter's post just to see if I can remember what that actually is.
Was it going to be added to Triss's charity to garden head shaving?
Yeah. Yes, from where Tristan had his head shaved. Thank you, because my brain has absolutely missed that. Every penny of it will either be towards bringing DC home or will be going to Tristan's charity, which both of which are a great cause in my eye. I'll forward you over the link for that, and we'll get that up and on so that people can add to it, if that's okay.
Of course it is. Some of the things that we... happened at the time we heard, and in the days past from that, is like we were sharing like screenshots of messages that and conversations that we'd all had with DC.
I smiled because the day after I found out, one of the memories came up on my phone again, which was we did the EOS race out at Charleroi in Belgium.
Yep.
And DC was filming Jimmy Story of Oopal walking down towards the track, and they suddenly come across my old black VW camper van, and Jimmy Story is actually trying to sing at me through the door, and you've got DC egging him on at it. And I won't say the words that were said because they're probably not appropriate, but it made me laugh like mad. Sat inside my van whilst they were doing it, and I didn't realize it was being filmed at the time, or I might have made a cameo, should we just say. It's one of my more fond memories of DC and Jimmy. And sort of when that popped up the day afterwards, like you say, it just brought back a whole host of memories, and I've been chatting with David Poulter a lot and reminiscing of some very good times. So it'll be definitely be a celebration of him him living rather than a mourning of him going.
Yeah.
When we get around to his funeral.
Yeah. And everyone feels equally. As we're talking about this, the American Big E, I believe, passed away today.
Yeah. Ernest Provesti. Yeah. Mr. Trinity himself.
I say these things to people. You can tell how important, it's not the right word important, but you can tell how important these people were to other people by the people who say and what they say about these people during the times, competitive at the time, but, leaders in what we do now, even though I don't know if, I'm not being funny, I'm new, I've only been doing it 15 years, I don't know the fella, but you can just see the people I know and the outpouring of thoughts and memories about Big E at DC is what brings us all together.
We all have our heroes in RC, so for me it's people like Jamie Booth, Ellis Stafford, Masami, Craig Drescher. They were the people that I admired when I was a kid coming up and through the ranks. But they were also the people like Ernest Brevetti were actually, and Mike Reedy were supporting, getting them up and racing, training them, helping them, giving them the right equipment to actually be able to do this. And so when your heroes are writing down sort of like heartfelt condolences and words to people like Ernest, it's you start to realize what an effect these people had on RC. I mean, yeah. Trinity were massively locked in with Losi back in the day. It was always Reedy and Associated and Trinity and Losi, or Trinity and Kyosho in the early days. Mm-hmm. And so you start to realize what a big involvement these people have had in shaping the hobby that we now race in.
Yeah. And it's our job to look after this.
Yeah.
And pass it on.
Very much so.
But at that point, we then need to get to sort of near the end of the podcast, which I have to explain like this because we're not taking any breaks. So, Nathan, thank you very much for everything you do in the UK. Thank you very much for everything you've helped me or anyone who's been with me or anyone who, if someone comes to me with an X-ray, I go, you need Nathan Rawls. You just need Nathan. And your understanding at the track of that, you know, I'm not going to change a piston in the middle of a race meeting, and worked with me to help make sure that we can do something to help improve. But before we let you go, and before I do thank you, podcast things, do you want to thank your sponsors or other people who have been good to you?
Yeah, if that's okay with you, it'd be very much appreciated. So a huge thank you, obviously, to X-Ray, RC Disco, Huddy, Expert Servos that are brought in by Answer RC in the UK. I use their PR4401. I use the SMD receivers, which come in through Jamie Booth at Spire Model Distribution. Racer Magazine, although now it's unfortunately it's closing. TKR Graphics, Mark K, and obviously Rules Racing, my own shop.
Okay. Okay. Didn't mention the missus there, mate.
We've always got to mention the missus, but she knows. Laura is, yeah, my long-suffering, even though we've only been together 10 years, wife.
It feels like 20 to her.
It probably does. She probably would have got less time for manslaughter and I would have saved a lot more money. But no, my amazing wife, Laura Rawls, she is an absolute saint. She came with me to the veterans as my good luck charm. Mm-hmm. And she'll be doing the same at both the revivals this year. She'll be at looking after myself and the rest of the team with coffee, bacon sandwiches, and everything else that we need. She is an absolute saint. She really is.
Coffee, bacon sandwiches. Maybe hashtag silly season isn't over.
She doesn't come to Nationals, mate. You're not in luck.
Excuse me. Neither do I, mate. Neither do I.
We need to get you at a vintage race and you'll be fine.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. Well, when we do have a vintage at Southport, okay. We have like a vintage 10.5 rear motor kind of class, just to put everybody else in. So I run a Cougar KR. So that's not that old. I think it's only about 9 years old.
It's got to be pre-98.
Yeah, but it looks old from the...
just because it's got the motor out the back, it looks old.
And I've even got like an SVR shell on it. So that makes it look like another 18 months older. But I think the only way we can stop you winning the Vets two-wheel drive next year is if we hold it in Stonehaven or Dumfries or Glasgow or somewhere like that. Somewhere that's 5 hours from me. So if it's 5 hours from me, it's 12 hours from you.
But we want to go and do the North Coast 500 again, so it'll just be an excuse to go up there.
Mrs. Rawls, you need to find something else to do for these 2 days.
Yeah,
because Nathan's gone recent again.
There was a garden centre there, so yeah, I came back with a motorhome full of plants.
Exactly, it's fine. That's fine. I would, unfortunately, thank you, Nathan, for coming on. I would also like to, of course, thank your teammates and my great friend, Hupo Honigal, for coming on last week and talking about his Euros. I would like, at this point, always to remember that I'm sure most people who've listened to this would also normally listen to the No Name RC podcast. But last week, this week, whatever you want to say, is an extra double reason to listen to it, because our Mark Nowen, our emperor of everything, was on in the middle. So don't worry about the No Name RC podcast being 3.5 hours long. Just listen to the hour and 15 minutes that Martin's there. you know, talking about his time as a kid, talking about, you know, his racing, talking about the stuff that goes on in RC, things that, you know, as he said, and I love when he doesn't come on, because we can say these things and he doesn't blush. You know, he wants to make 10th better.
Yeah.
But he's not going to throw everything out. He's not going to cause carnage like I would.
He's actually, I don't want to shout his praises and blow smoke at him, but everybody always thinks they can do something better or something different or has different ideas. What I will say is, Martin in his first year, what was great about the BRCA has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the bits where the BRCA could be improved, like social media, the way it is promoted to the masses, has changed and mm-hmm. has improved. I know there's some other bits there as well, and there's always ideas and good and bad things that are happening. But in general, his first year there, from a racer's perspective, I think it's been a raging success. The guy's doing an amazing job in probably the most difficult year of nationals coming back after the pandemic, or during a pandemic, I should say, because it's not over. Guy's doing an amazing job, and I'm amazed at the improvements that he has found in there. So yeah, fair play to him.
I think he had a terrible veterans event regarding the Zulf.
We didn't rub it in much at all to him when he had slight problems in four-wheel drive, shall we just say.
Not if he can blame me, that's my four-wheel drive.
You're definitely
I'm getting a 3-month ban for that, aren't I? But you know, so please check out the No Name RC podcast. Check out all the podcasts, you know what I mean? Please do. There's been some great episodes, there's some great YouTube stuff out. Just get involved, just get things, just do it. I don't care whether you buy stuff from Nathan's shop, from one of the big shops like Model Sport, you get it direct from your distributor or something like that. Let's just go buy some bits, okay? And let's get racing and enjoying ourselves.
Let's start to support our hobby. You know, as the track owners say, use it or lose it. And it's the same with our shops. Let's support the UK brands.
Yeah, that's it.
And shops and distributors. So definitely needs to be done.
So please like and share this podcast. Please like and share all the podcasts. I've enjoyed myself. If you weren't so busy, you should just do a vintage. Someone should do a vintage podcast.
I think we'll have a chat about that one afterwards, maybe. But yeah, definitely.
Because I'm not funny, because people would listen to it. They listen to this. Listen to you and me rabbing on for an hour and a half. Imagine you were talking to somebody who knew what you were talking about regarding vintage and things along those lines. There's a couple of guys who were interested, and of course we and I say we as in this, the Extra Lap and the Grid Talk, would help in any way we shape or could to get any sort of other content up. So just bring it up in a meeting at some point. But Nathan, thanks very much for your time. Guys, thanks very much for listening. Just to say hashtag Schumacher family, because Muzz loves me. And we will catch you all. Well, I'll speak to you all next week. Nathan, thanks for your time, mate. Goodbye.
Thank you so much for having me.